At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Hornets Hivecast, the official podcast of your Charlotte Hornets. Here's your host, Sam Farber.
Welcome to another edition of the Hornets Hivecast, your daily podcast with all the notes, quotes, and daily buzz around your favorite NBA team, the Charlotte Hornets. I'm Sam Farber, and it is a pleasure and a privilege to have you with us once again on the HHC Game Day Edition. Hornets getting set to take on the Milwaukee Bucks, third and final meeting of the season. Hornets have already wrapped up the season series. Not that the tiebreaker is expected to come into play, but hey, stranger things, right? The Hornets getting ready to take on Milwaukee. Certainly a significant game for both teams. Milwaukee trying to make their way up to potentially the top spot in the East. That's still in play. And the Hornets, of course, trying to make sure A, they clinch a postseason berth, and B, still have a shot at a top six position as well. So we'll preview tonight's game. Also going to be talking about who are you paying closer attention to right now? Are you looking at Boston and Miami in hopes that Charlotte moves up? Or are you more focused on Toronto and Chicago, hoping that the Hornets clinch? Well, there was a game last night that kind of put that at odds because Miami and Chicago played each other. So who would you have been rooting for? We'll talk about that. And also, recently, PJ Washington has moved back into the starting lineup at the center spot. Should PJ play the five moving forward? We'll talk about all these topics. And help me do it, it's my producer from the Hornets Hivecast, as well as the Hornets Radio Network, Rob Longo, here with us today. Rob, how are you?
I'm great, Sam. How are you?
Doing well. Let's start with the PJ topic. PJ Washington at the five. Last game for the Hornets was one of their best offensive efforts of the season. 125 points go up on the board against the Boston Celtics. PJ Washington got the start at the center spot. Played really well, 22 points, shot 4 of 6 from 3, had a double-double with 12 rebounds. Boston is a team that brings a center to the table, and Tristan Thompson, a pretty good one. So it's not as if they were, you know, in a matchup where it is no center on the other side. So clearly, why would you not go out there with PJ Washington? There was some pushback from the other side. Obviously ends up in one of the most impressive wins of the season. So the question's out there. Should PJ play the five the rest of the way, or should you mix and match depending on the matchup? Maybe bring in Biz, maybe bring in Cody Zeller, depending on who you're going up against. What do you say?
It's tough. It's a tough question to pose. I think it all depends on specific matchups. I feel like that's a little bit of a cop-out when you pose this question. But, you know, if an opponent doesn't have a dominating big, I mean, if you're not drawing Philadelphia in a playoff series down the line and having to go up against a guy like a Joel Embiid, who is an MVP caliber kind of guy, I think you can afford to play small. I think it's been a good look, especially the way that Miles Bridges has been playing really well right now at the four with Gordon Hayward out, and the way that they've had to mix and match that between Miles Bridges and Jalen McDaniels. And I understand it's important to balance out the rotation right now, but the starting lineup has been so productive the last few games, that Cleveland game, that Boston game. Now that the offense is finally able to turn the corner a little bit, I wouldn't really touch it. So I looked it up, and in six games this season, PJ has started at the five, and in those games, the Hornets are 4-2. PJ in those games is averaging about 16.7 points per game, 7.1 rebounds, 3.3 assists, about a steal and a half. For the entire season, PJ's average is around 12.2 points per game, 6.4 rebounds, 2.4 assists, 1 steal per game. So the production is up when PJ plays the 5, but the other factor in that too that you have to keep in mind is he's been playing the 5 a lot more often as a starter the last couple of weeks, and I think he's really turned a corner the last few weeks. He was definitely in a shooting slump there for a while, but I think he's starting to rebound. We're starting to see the PJ Washington that we saw in those games that were out on the West Coast earlier this season when he had a career-high 42 points against Sacramento, and I think just the offense has been flowing so much better that he is able to thrive in that as well.
I'm kind of with you on the it's a matchup thing. PJ has been a really strong defensive player at the five, But it's one thing to do that when you're taking on a team who's maybe doesn't have a really great big man, or whose big man does not like to sit down in the post, like, say, a Lopez brother that the Hornets are going to see tonight in Milwaukee. It's another thing to try and do that with Joel Embiid or Nikola Vucevic, who have the potential to take advantage of those kinds of matchups with a smaller man against them. And also, Cody Zeller has been really strong in spots for the Hornets. I don't think he should disappear entirely. And similarly for Bismack Biyombo. So it's not to downgrade there. It's just looking specifically at PJ at the five, which he's done very well at the last couple of games. I looked at the numbers too. I looked more in depth at the statistics on, you know, lineups. How does he perform when he's on the floor at the five, and how does everyone else perform when he's there? PJ's numbers, there's no doubt about it. His offense goes up when he's playing the center position. His three-point percentage is up, probably more likely because he's got a bigger guy guarding him, and you're stretching that person out, and that person maybe not as used to defending the three. So PJ tends to get more open looks, and he tends to score more points per 36 minutes when he's playing the five. The other question is, what happens to everyone else on the floor? And I thought that was interesting. For one, Miles Bridges numbers go down. He shoots about 4% less, 4 points less percentage wise from three, and he averages about a point and a half less per 36 minutes when he's playing with PJ Washington. Similarly, LaMelo Ball's stats go down a little bit. His scoring per 36 minutes comes down, and Devontae Graham's scoring comes down about a point per 36 minutes. Devontae, it's less of a concern because he can be a distributor, and maybe for LaMelo Ball it is too, because, you know, maybe you want their assist numbers to go up with PJ on the floor, and maybe their scoring's less of a factor. But with Miles Bridges, I thought it was interesting because his numbers came down pretty considerably in terms of shooting percentage with PJ on the floor at the five. The players whose statistics improve with PJ at the five, Gordon Hayward, his shooting goes up a little bit, and his points per 36 minutes goes up as well. Malik Monk, it goes up a lot. His shooting percentage goes through the roof when he plays with PJ, up 5 points on the three-point percentage, and he's up about 3 points per 36 minutes, which is a huge jump when PJ is at the five. So it's kind of a mixed bag. I'm not really entirely sure what it indicates. You know, maybe it indicates PJ at the five is better with the second unit because Malik Monk is the most positively affected. Then again, maybe not. Maybe it's a sign that Miles Bridges needs to play with the second unit because he's seems to be the most adversely affected, statistically speaking, with PJ at the five. Or maybe it's hard to say because all these guys have been hurt at so many different times, and these are season-long stats. It's hard to decipher who's playing well when and how that impacts all these numbers. So that's a long, long way of saying, I don't know.
You know, I'm right there with you, Sam, because it's so hard to decipher, like you mentioned, because of all the injuries, because of all the mixing and matching that James Borrego has had to do. When you threw those stats out there at first, I'm thinking, okay, it's probably because PJ is in that stretch spot. He's got a little bit more space. He's probably getting more open looks. So guys like Devontae and LaMelo are probably going to try to feed him more, knowing that he's going to be open for maybe a corner three more often than he would maybe at the four spot. And if the fact that PJ is able to stretch that middle out, Gordon Hayward, we know, likes to really get into that 15-foot range. He likes to dribble to his spots around the elbow just outside the key, and he's able to knock those shots down. So it makes sense that his scoring goes up as well and his production goes up. That makes sense to me because he's probably getting more open looks as well with some more separation without a rim protector running out at him trying to close him off. So like you said, it is a very mixed bag. It's very hard to decipher, and I'm sure if James Borrego and the coaching staff with all of the analytics that they use to determine who the best lineup is out there and who should be playing the most minutes, I'm sure they would have an answer for you too, because we would see maybe some different lineups. But it's so hard to tell with the way that the season has gone, just with all of the injuries and all of the mixing and matching that has gone on rotation wise and up until this point, you've had guys playing hot, you've had guys playing cold. Miles Bridges is playing hot right now, so maybe those numbers are different for the last 2 weeks. It's just so hard to tell.
Yeah, and the other thing about all these numbers is they're all offensive numbers. They don't say anything about what happens defensively for all of these individual players or PJ himself. I think at the end of the day, look, as you indicated, there's a lot of people who are focused on this and trying to figure out the right matchups at the right time. Some some of this is out of necessity. PJ is playing the five right now because it's working, and also because without Gordon Hayward, without LaMelo Ball, without Malik Monk, you have to find ways to generate more offense, and PJ's numbers clearly go up personally when he is out there on the floor at the five. So trying to squeeze more points out of him helps squeeze more points out of the overall unit without some of those players unavailable. Ultimately, whether it's a matter of necessity, doesn't matter. In JB, we trust, and he'll pull the right levers at the right time. But overall, statistically speaking, it is at best unclear if, when everyone is healthy, is PJ at the five the very best option. And ultimately, he can't play 48 minutes a game. So someone's got to come in there for the other ones. And the team, when they're healthy, was playing pretty effectively with a mix and match of PJ at the five at times and Cody at the five at times and Biz at the five at times. So again, long way of saying, I don't know, but it's an interesting conversation, hopefully, to have. Coming up next, we're going to talk about who are you focused on, the teams battling for sixth or the teams trying to chase the Hornets down from just outside the play-in position. That's next here on the Hornets Hivecast.
Cody Zeller knows how to finish an assist. Now you can be a part of one of his biggest plays of the season. Socks are the most under-donated item for those in need, and the Cody Zeller Sock Drive presented by Hanes is ready to attack that problem. You can help make socks a priority by donating one pack of new socks or $5 to the Cody Zeller Sock Drive, and all donations will be matched by Hanes and will benefit Roof Above. Head to Hornets.com and search Cody Zeller Sock Drive for more information.
Sam Farber and Rob Longo here with you on the HHC. Rob, there was an interesting game last night in the association. Hornets had the night off, so of course I watched more basketball. There was Miami taking on Chicago. I'm sure a lot of people, you know who won that game, but before we get into that, I want to know, who were you rooting for? Were you looking at Miami, who's a little bit ahead of the Hornets, and hoping that they would lose to make it more of a possibility that Charlotte could move up to seventh, or dare I say sixth? Or are you rooting against Chicago and hoping the Hornets move one step closer to clinching their play-in spot? Who were you rooting for yesterday?
So I naturally usually just kind of root for chaos whenever it arises, especially like NCAA tournament time. Like, I don't mind seeing 15 and 16 seeds win, even if it costs me my bracket. But at this point, the Hornets are closer to catching the Heat than the Bulls are to catching the Hornets. It's about a 5-game spread for the Bulls to get to Charlotte, and then it's only about 2 games to catch, or a game and a half, depending on how you look at it, to catch the Miami Heat. So I was rooting for the Bulls personally. I think the magic number can wait. I would rather much try to avoid the play-in round at all costs and maybe even be able to catch Boston at some point, depending on what happens Wednesday night.
Yeah, this might be a short segment. I'm in agreement. I think it is better for the Hornets to have a better shot to chase down the teams above them than to be concerned about those below. I don't also think it's really tempting fate for the Hornets potentially falling out of the play-in spot and not getting to the postseason because, as you mentioned, they're closing in pretty rapidly on the magic number, which, because, let the cat out of the bag in case you didn't know it before, Chicago won last night, 110-102 over Miami. So the magic number does not change for the Hornets. It remains at 8 at this stage of the game. And honestly, I think that's okay because with the remaining schedule, one, Chicago and Toronto are almost certainly not going to win out. So it's not going to take 8 wins. It probably still takes somewhere around 4 or 5, which the Hornets should be able to pick up on their own moving on. And also, I don't think it's out of the question for the Hornets to chase down Miami and or Boston. They've got the head-to-head matchups that give it a possibility at this stage after their win over the Celtics, plus with the Hornets getting healthier. And furthermore, if you just want to look at those two specific teams, Chicago's schedule moving forward is really, really difficult. They've got to play Brooklyn twice. They've got to play Milwaukee twice. They've got to play Philadelphia once. And while the Hornets have a really tough week here, taking on Milwaukee and Boston in a back-to-back, after that, the schedule gets much more favorable looking ahead to May. So I am with you. I was looking at Chicago winning as more of a net positive for the Hornets, And it turned out that way, so even though the magic number doesn't come down, Miami does come a little bit closer to the Hornets. The Hornets are one game back of Miami, but with two more to play. So the ball is in Charlotte's court, if you will. Hornets getting wins here will pull them closer to Miami. We'll see how things go down the stretch. Those two are now tied in the loss column. So Hornets hoping not to add to that loss column tonight. Tough matchup playing Milwaukee. We're going to preview that one for you next here on the Hornets Hivecast.
Hornets fans, during the month of April, the Charlotte Hornets and their official hunger relief partner, Food Lion Feeds, are launching the 2021 Dunk Hunger Food Drive to benefit Second Harvest Food Bank of Metro Atlanta.
The Bridges, who throws it down with a right hand.
For every Hornets dunk this month,
slams it down with two hands.
Food Lion will donate 1,000 meals.
Terry Rozier throws it down over Kevin Durant.
For more information on how you can help Food Lion and the Hornets dunk hunger, visit hornets.com/dunkhunger.
Sam Farber and Rob Longo here with you on the HHC. It's a game day edition of the Hivecast. Hornets taking on the Milwaukee Bucks. And Rob, Milwaukee, they're playing well right now. They did lose to Atlanta last game, but Hawks have been playing pretty well over their last five. But prior to that, Milwaukee blew out Philadelphia, beat them by almost 40, and won back-to-back games against the 76ers, making things a little bit more interesting at the top of the Eastern Conference. It's pretty much in universal agreement. There's a three-headed monster in the East: Brooklyn, Philadelphia, and Milwaukee. Milwaukee is not quite a distant third at this stage, but with the season winding down, less than 15 games left to go, closing in on 10, they're 3.5 games back of Brooklyn, so it's becoming less and less likely they'll creep into the top two. But they did do themselves some favors by getting two wins over Philadelphia. All that being said, the Hornets, this game probably means a lot more to them than it does to Milwaukee. I'm not sure the Bucks mind being in third. Getting to second helps a little bit, but you know, in terms of having home court advantage and that potential Eastern Conference semifinal series, but not really that much of a boost to them. They're going to be most concerned hitting the playoffs healthy. For the Hornets, this one's big. Every game's big because, you know, every win you get here pulls you closer to maybe avoiding the play-in tournament, and every loss you take makes it more of a solidified fate that you're going to have to play your way in to the final eight. Your thoughts, Rob, on this head-to-head matchup with Milwaukee?
Well, every game is big, like you mentioned, coming down the stretch, and it probably does mean a little bit more for the Hornets, but when you look at the standings, it's only about a 2.5 game difference between the Bucks and the 76ers for second and third place, and Milwaukee's 3.5 back of Brooklyn. So it all depends on what this Brooklyn team is like moving down the stretch too, with all of the injuries they've had to deal and overcome with as well. So if you're a Milwaukee fan, you're probably still thinking they have an outside shot at the number one seed, so you want them to play every game as hard as possible. We haven't seen the injury report as of this recording to see who is in, who is out. PJ Tucker did not play in that game in Atlanta on Sunday. It'll be interesting to see if he ends up playing tonight. Again, we don't know anything like that, but you can't take much stock, obviously, in the last matchup between these two teams because none of the five starters that are normally in the starting five for Milwaukee ended up playing in that game. Everybody was hurt. Everybody was dealing with some injuries, some bumps and bruises along the way as well. So I got to go back and look at the first meeting. That was all the way back at the end of January, January 30th, and that was probably, up until that point, the most complete game that the Hornets played. Everything was clicking for Charlotte. A lot of tensions on the other side. Brook Lopez got a technical. Giannis Antetokounmpo was an assist shy of a triple-double, so he played out of his mind like he normally does. But the Hornets needed everybody and anybody at that point. They ended up hitting 21 threes in that game, shooting 48% beyond the arc. Shot 48% from the floor as well. Only turned the ball over 9 times, so they have to play almost a picture-perfect game tonight in order to keep it competitive, keep it close, and eventually hopefully pull out the win.
Yeah, the previous two meetings, I don't know how much you can really discern from them for the Hornets at this stage. The first one, as you mentioned, a lot had to go right for Charlotte and did. It was one of the bigger wins of the season, if not the biggest win of the season over Milwaukee at that time. And even right till today, I think you can make an argument for it. The last head-to-head meeting, Milwaukee benched everyone, and the Hornets had basically had to bench almost five of their core players out of injuries at that stage. A lot of walking wounded for Charlotte, but Milwaukee, with so many starters sitting that one, made it a matchup that Buzz City could win, and they certainly are grateful for that victory now as they try and compete their way into a play-in spot or perhaps avoiding it. I think the stat column to watch for this one, Rob, is three-point shooting. As I mentioned, Milwaukee, I think, is playing well overall right now. And in that loss to Atlanta, yes, the Hawks are playing well too, but three-point shooting kind of let Milwaukee down. They're so dominant in the middle with the strength and finesse and ability of the two-time reigning MVP, Giannis Antetokounmpo. You got to find some kind of equalizer. And for Charlotte, so often it's either their three-point shooting or the team they're playing going cold from beyond the arc. To win this one, you might need both, considering Gordon Hayward, LaMelo Ball, and Malik Monk are all still out, and Milwaukee is much healthier now than they were in that last meeting. So the three-point shot can be, at times, the great equalizer. For the Hornets, it might need to be both in terms of them shooting it well and Milwaukee not, but Hornets coming off their best offensive performance of the season with this limited group in terms of not having all of their weapons at their disposal. Hopefully they can come through with another great offensive performance and Milwaukee stays cold for another day beyond the arc.
Going back to our first segment, this might be one of the instances where we see PJ Washington maybe come off the bench. He's going to be giving up about 5 inches to Brook Lopez. Brook Lopez is a 7-footer. PJ is listed as 6'7", so not a great favorable matchup for PJ Washington. And Bismack Biyombo, for whatever reason, did not play in the very first meeting back in January between these two teams. It ended up being the Cody Zeller show, and he finished with 7 points and had 15 rebounds. He played really well, ended up as a -4 and a +/-, but he provided 34 really hard minutes, and that was kind of towards the beginning of when he returned from that hand injury. He did have some games under his belt at that point, but he was probably one of the fresher players on the floor. So it'll be interesting to see how the rotation shakes out, how James Borrego decides to attack this, especially on the front end of a back-to-back with a really important game against Boston on Wednesday.
The weird thing about Milwaukee is I'd almost go the other way. I'd almost say it's better for PJ Washington to go head-to-head with Brook Lopez, because Lopez likes to linger around the perimeter. He's made himself into a little bit more of a three-point shooter at this stage of his career, and he doesn't put forth a very big rebounding threat. He just doesn't. He kind of spreads the floor. He's only averaging 5 rebounds per game. The last couple of games, he's been in the low single digits, like 1 or 2 rebounds per contest. And then their guy off the bench, Bobby Portis, he's a bulldog out there. I mean, he's a little undersized compared to some other centers, but he can really throw his weight around. He knows how to maneuver down there in the paint, and he is a big-time rebounder, say undersized at 6 foot. I mean, he's not a 7-footer, but you know what I mean. He's still a big body down there. He's bigger than PJ is. So I don't know. It's an interesting one. I think this might be one where, given the limitations of your lineup, again, with no Gordon Hayward, no LaMelo Ball, no Malik Monk, maybe it's a good day to start PJ, because if the only thing you lose is the tip and you win everything else in terms of the matchup with Lopez, maybe it's one you take. We'll find out soon enough. Full pregame show will come later today on Sports Radio FNZ starting at 6 p.m. and then tip is at 7 tonight as the Hornets take on the Milwaukee Bucks, third and final meeting of the season. And we'll, of course, hope you'll join us. If you can't join us at the arena, maybe make some plans. Go to Hornets.com for last-minute ticket information. But hope you join us on the Hornets Radio Network as well as Bally Sports Southeast. Eric Collins, Del Curry, Ashley Shamedy, and Gerald Henderson will take care of you over there. Rob, thanks as always for joining us here today on the Hornets Hivecast.
Appreciate it. Now that you mention it, I'm starting to see your viewpoint and I'm starting to agree with you, and that's why they pay you the big bucks.
That's right. You've seen the light. Agree with Sam. It always wins the podcast. No, we appreciate your perspective as always, and thanks for joining us, and thanks, of course, to all of you for tuning in as well. Join us tomorrow. We'll have a double header of sorts here on the podcast, and that we'll have the breakdown of this matchup with Milwaukee, as well as a preview of game 2 of the back-to-back, Hornets at the Celtics, game 3 of the season series. And it's the rubber match, which could be a factor, could play into things as the Hornets come down the stretch here on this 2020-2021 regular season. Till next time, for everyone here, I'm Sam Farber saying it's been a pleasure and a privilege having you along. And in the words of LaMelo Ball,
thank you. Have a good day. Wear your mask.
Thanks for listening to the Hornets Hivecast. For more coverage, visit Hornets.com.